Welcome to Dog Training Disrupted, where I retrain your brain and introduce you to the world of cognitive behavioral therapy for dogs over the age of 6 months. Today's show is all about fostering. Well, one topic of many on fostering. As many of you know, I have worked with hundreds of fosters and have a pro bono program designed to provide fosters with the skills to bring the dog into their home and to set that dog up for successful rehoming. Working with fosters can be challenging. Well, let me clarify that. The fosters themselves are great. The perception they have of their goals and how to achieve those goals can determine the outcome or success of the program. And this is so important. In this episode, I use the example of one foster in the US and I discuss the goals, the steps, and the reasons for fostering. This may seem obvious, but I think you might find the approach that I take and the goals that we establish interesting. Hello, I'm Billy Groom, your host and successful dogologist for over 3 decades. I recently worked with a foster family who took in an adolescent dog, which I will name Hannah. The couple had a few dogs of their own, and unfortunately the older dog, a rather stubborn but well-behaved dog, was not a fan of Hannah, and Hannah was not a fan of that dog not liking her, and that led to fights. When the couple contacted me, they did not feel Hannah was well-behaved enough to be homed. Fair enough. Although friendly, she was quite jumpy, she was leash-reactive, stole objects, had separation anxiety. She played with their other dogs, not the senior one, obviously, but she played with their other ones, but she didn't really listen well enough. She could escalate quickly, and that could lead to unwanted behavior between those two dogs, which was more manageable, but still a little bit eeky. They love her to bits, but she could be a handful, and even without the other dogs around. So, if the goal was to adopt Hannah, or Hannah was already a family member, and their goal was to keep Hannah, then we would follow a program designed to address the dynamics between the dogs, and obviously address the other issues as well. But it would be essential to make sure that the dynamics between the dogs worked. That would be the goal. But since the goal for fosters is different to that of pet parents, so is the upper dogology program that works with fosters. So the goal of the foster program is not to be the best home for that dog or to create the best home for that dog, but rather to set that dog up to go to the best home and to have the skills to do that. I have homed hundreds of dogs and I'm well aware that I'm not the best home for every dog. That doesn't make me an awful home, obviously, but it's just that some dogs would love to live with kids or perhaps hang out with a couch potato homebody. And those are just environments I wouldn't be able to provide that dog. So we need to learn the best home for that dog and provide the skills to set that dog up to go to the best home. So the goals for Hannah were to, one, gain calm manageability when she is playing with dogs so they can read and prevent any behaviors that may cause upsets or escalate into that. Number two, achieve better leash control on walks, especially when other dogs are going by. Number three, establish a calm approach when meeting people, remembering that she's very friendly to people. Number four, address separation anxiety. And number five, create transferable skills, allowing the adopter to communicate with her, co-communication, and to easily integrate her into their family. I'm sure you've all read posts advertising for dogs needing homes. And these posts can contain a laundry list of restrictions, such as no cats, no dogs, no kids, the people must be home all day. They must have a high fenced yard, and they'll say things like the dog needs leash work or that they're working on house training or crate training, perhaps even scared of loud noises. It goes on and on and on. And do all of these behaviors need to be overcome to home the dog? No, but it is really important to address some of these behaviors because those are a lot of restrictions. So by addressing the ones that are important to most people and establishing skills allowing for successful adoption, we decrease the barriers or the restrictions to adoption. Of course, refostering or rehoming is not always easy. There's not always a lot of options, especially if there's a history of aggression. But once we achieve the 5 goals with Hannah, The foster couple could confidently home Hannah in a home without a dog that she annoyed. So there were still, what we had to do was get to know her and say, okay, if we can't have a dog that annoys her, that's fine, but let's address some of these other issues. We actually didn't work on the dynamics between Hannah and that senior dog, and that was a mutual decision because really that senior dog gets along with the other dogs. And we thought, well, maybe perhaps as Hannah gets better, more focused, then that dog may take a liking to her. But that isn't really the goal because Hannah's not staying there. And if that senior dog chooses to continue to dislike her, we need to respect that. So we focused on the goals for homing her. We achieved those five goals. She became a much better dog in the sense of focusing, and they could take her for walks, and there was no longer separation anxiety. They always loved being around her, but she was just easier to manage, and they knew her better, they understood her better, they knew they could find the best home for her. The Foster's advertisement had an air of failure, or perhaps defeat. Why? Well, I don't really know, but perhaps they wanted to keep her. In which case, I didn't know that, and the entire program would have been different with different goals. I understand it's sad when fosters go to rehome the dog. There's an air of sadness, but this was almost, like I said, as though they failed her. When in fact, rehoming a dog and getting to that point of being able to home a dog should be seen as success. With the Upward Dogology program, this can happen quite quickly. You know, less, I mean, it really depends on the dog, as we all know. But the first 4 to 10 days really sets a lot of these skills. And then after that, we can quickly address a lot of problems, in particular, anything related to anxiety. So often these fosters are homing these dogs quicker than they thought. The Upward Dogology Foster Program is designed to address common barriers to adoption, read and learn about the dog, personality, their preference, their skills, their behaviors, and teach skills that create a bond and communication between the dog and the adopter, and these are carried forward. So this commonly takes 10 days to 2 weeks. And of course, we start this, when I'm talking about this, that the dog has overcome any physical issues, or if there was travel or a reason to just have some downtime, then that has been completed. From there, if we need to address other issues, the platform skills to do this is established, or the dog can be homed, and then the behavioral issues can be addressed at a realistic place and in an environment more conducive to working on the issues. So, for example, those who may adopt dogs like Hannah, they could work in a more comfortable environment on her perception and her behavior towards senior dogs and see if it was just that particular dog or whether it's other ones, and work on that at a pace that's more comfortable, an environment that's more comfortable. So the Upward Dogology Foster Program is designed to provide the fosters with the tools to read and understand the dog, prevent behavioral issues, address behaviors commonly preventing adoption, and establish transferable skills for the adopter to easily bond and integrate the dog. The Upward Dogology Foster Program implements the following steps. Number one, apply exercises that determine level of skill set, cognition, likes and dislikes, personality, comfort level. In other words, get to know the individual dogs. We use cognitive exercises specific to each dog's skill level and personality. These exercises are not challenging or time-consuming, and they can be started right in that first 1 to 4 day period. We, of course, use canine cognitive behavioral therapy, and that takes the mindset of learning about the dog. So it's a different mindset. It's not all about teaching. Many adolescent or adult dogs know basic commands, but for example, they refuse to sit for a treat. This is not a barrier to adoption or an indication of stubbornness. Some dogs, when we hold up a treat, they just auto-sit. What does that tell us? It indicates that they've been to puppy class or had some form of positive reinforcement training. And what does that mean? It means we should be advancing, not repeating that level of training. We might learn if they're house trained. If they are house trained, it doesn't necessarily mean that they lived in a house. There's lots of street dogs I've brought in that refuse to mess in the home, which is great. But if a dog is not house trained, perhaps we're not reading their cues. Perhaps in in the home or in the foster home, they use a bell and the dog has no idea what the bell is. One dog may bark or stare at a person. So it's essential to learn their cues and not just assume that they're not house trained and go back to using standard reinforcement based training to house train when they're house trained. We just need to learn more about how to read that in them. Many do not need or even like a crate, and this is not necessary for adoption. If later the dog is adopted and the people, for example, want to travel with the dog, then that can be addressed at that time. Being treat motivated is not always necessary. All dogs don't have to respond to treats. That doesn't mean we just ignore treats. I mean, obviously, canine cognitive behavioral therapy, it's not that we just eliminate treats but use the same method. It's a completely different method. This is a whole other topic, and you can learn more about this in the early episodes of this podcast. But just because a dog is treat motivated doesn't mean that every issue is going to get addressed that way. And if they're not treat motivated, it doesn't mean that they have to become treat motivated. It's up to us to notice what is important to them and where we gain their cognitive skills. Adaptability and flexibility is key. Number two, advance and apply the exercises that harness cognitive skills to create a bond and a communication that is transferable to different situations. So we're going on walks and into pet stores, and we might go on car rides, go to new places and play dates. And those skills that we established at the beginning, these cognitive exercises, we continue these in the first, we build them and we continue them in the first 1 to 10 day period. With these exercises, which harness cognitive skills, we are recognizing their emotional intelligence. We're harnessing their cognitive skills, respecting their thought patterns. It's flexible and it's non-harmful. Number three, we then creatively apply these skills and exercises to ensure the dog is comfortable with change and routines. This is opposite of adopting a dog. If you're adopting a dog, you're going to get that dog to know your routines and what's comfortable with you and your house rules, which we can absolutely do, but it's a different program if we're fostering, because the chances of the new home having those same routines is very, very low. So we need to get the dog comfortable with change in routines. We actually create commands and teach them in a way that reset the dog's brain and allow them to focus on change in routines. And what I mean by these routines are walking routine, feeding routine, morning routine, evening routine, even getting to the vehicle. So we're not just simply changing these routines, because if we do that randomly, it could increase anxiety or confusion. But once we insert the platform exercises that the dog is already comfortable in, and we insert these platform exercises to disrupt these routines, we are allowing that dog to be comfortable with people managing situations and changing routines using a transferable element, using these exercises that can then go to the adopter. And these also provide decision-making skills. They allow the dog to think things through, process, make decisions, and they are bonding. They create a bond between the person and the dog, and then that can be transferred. Number four, we apply canine CBT, these exercises and also other ones. We apply them to overcome barriers to adoption. So again, the common ones would be house training. If the dog is not house trained, that needs to be done. Leash reactivity, it can be addressed in the new home, but it would be great to be addressed prior to homing. General jumping on people and grabbing food off the counters or stealing socks, those type of things, separation anxiety. Resource guarding, which falls into aggression, but it should be assessed and addressed, hopefully, in the foster home. And that I do all the time, and CCBT has a high success rate in that. High anxiety can prevent adoption, and we should address that anxiety, which also addresses a lot of other issues once the anxiety is addressed. And that's where CCBT shines as well. Number five, we create transferable skills. Of course, these have already been taught, but we really need to acknowledge that these are transferable to the new home. They bring comfort, recognition, and consistency. Transferable skills are different than transferring a routine. Like I said, not everyone's going to have the same routine. Of course, you can take a blanket or a bed, or you can say, oh, the dog is treat motivated and have the people use treats. But using skills that harness the dog's brain and get the dog to perceive the people as knowing what they know and understanding what's important to them is incredibly bonding and has a high success rate in keeping that dog in the new home. The dog literally thinks that the adopter is brilliant, that the adopter knows what the foster knew and what they know, and they perceive that adopter as having the ability to calmly manage and work with them and to bond with them and communicate. So number six, explore, advance the activities, and create new situations. Really learn about that dog. Now that we have skills that we can take this dog to new areas and continue to create situations that allow us to determine the best home. Number seven, establish new transferable skills. So again, continuing to work with the dog and learn and explore and advance. This would be more in line with dogs that might stay in a foster home a little bit longer for whatever reason. And so you just want to continue to advance and work with this dog. So if you feel defeated or as though you have let your foster dog down because you cannot keep him or her, or you cannot address all behavior issues, just remember where the dog started, how far you've come, and the goals of fostering. Write down those goals initially and refer back to them. You may not be the perfect home for that dog, but you are the family that started the journey to the forever home. So while you give your foster dog a pat, give yourself a pat on the back as well. Again, if you've not checked out the first four episodes of this podcast, I would suggest doing it because it will be helpful in understanding some of what I refer to in this episode. And of course, in this episode, I didn't cover everything to do in relation to fostering and adoption. However, there are episodes earlier in this podcast, so in the show notes, I'll provide links to those ones where I discuss fostering and adopting, and I debunk some of the common approaches and provide scientific evidence proving the need for change in the process of fostering and adopting. So those links are in the show notes. My roots in animal welfare have sent me on yet another venture. I'm hosting on All About Animals Radio, which offers multiple different podcasts and YouTube shows. I'm one of the hosts for Effective Animal Advocacy on All About Animals Radio. And then I also have my own show, The Solutionist Show, because we all know I am all about solutions. Less complaining, more braining. I think you'll find this show inspiring and eye-opening. And it's all guests that are doing really interesting animal advocacy, programs, innovations, businesses, all to do with animal advocacy and in particular with domestic animals. And the links to that are in the show notes. Your support is always appreciated. Please share Dog Training Disrupted by Upward Dogology on your social media, and please give any positive ratings or reviews if you listen on a platform that allows for that. Feedback and questions are always welcome. Enjoy your learning journey.